was taken from Matthew 17, from 1 to 9. And I've come to learn today is Transfiguration Sunday, which is the end of Epiphany. So Transfiguration marks the midpoint in a series of scenes in Matthew that defines who Jesus is. In the scene leading up to the Transfiguration, the disciples followed a Jesus who walked on water, a Jesus who did a lot of healing, who multiplied loaves of bread and fishes for thousands. They followed this Jesus. But they could not yet imagine what it means to follow Jesus, who claims a title of being a Messiah. You see, although Peter earlier on identified Jesus as the Messiah, the Son of the living God, he utterly rejected Jesus' announcement that he will suffer and die. Jesus had to rebuke him. Peter just couldn't understand the Messiah and dying. It just didn't go together for Peter. You see, a dying Messiah did not fit in Peter's mind of what he understood, and most of the Jews at the time understood a Messiah to be. According to the biblical accounts, 6 days after Peter's confession, Jesus took his inner circle. So, you know, he had the inner circle, those who were more privileged to see certain things and understood certain things. He took those with him, and that was Peter, James, and John. And he took them up the mountain to witness this awesome, amazing transfiguration that he was going to go through. All three disciples were going to become witness. Now, this was not the first time something awesome happened on the mountain. We just read earlier on that Moses went up to the mountain and that he had encountered, you know, the God, and his face shone. He didn't transfigure, but his face shone bright and dazzling. And here, Jesus was going to have the same experience. The thing is, nobody witnessed what happened to Moses. But Jesus had three disciples who were going to be witness of this awesome experience. They were going to see Jesus in his full glory. Not only they were going to see Jesus in his full glory, they had the privilege of seeing Moses. This old patriarch that they heard of, they had the privilege of seeing Moses standing next to Jesus. And also Elijah was there. You see, Elijah was the great prophet who challenged the prophets of Baal, calling down fire from heaven. So Jesus was standing in between Moses, who represented the law and the book of the law, and Elijah, the prophet. And the Bible said he was fellowshipping with them. He was having conversation. And I often wonder, you know, what were they talking about? If I could just be a fly on the wall to kind of eavesdrop, what were they talking about? I believe that they were encouraging Jesus because he was heading off to Jerusalem. He was heading off to a major trial of suffering. So maybe he needed a little encouragement. I don't know. That's just my theory. You could talk to Rhonda and John after. Maybe they could explain a bit more. And Peter, who I love because he was so impulsive, and oftentimes when we don't know what to do, we just want to do something to take away that feeling, you know, that feeling. He jumped up and said, "Lord, if you still will, let me build three dwellings." Some translation said street tents, you know, because that's what we like to do. Those moments that are so glorious, we like to commemorate those moments, you know, whether it's a wedding, whether it's a graduation. We like to hold on to those moments just so we could remember them because they feel good. But then a voice spoke from the cloud and said, "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." Again, it wasn't the first time a voice spoke from the cloud again. In Matthew, earlier on in Matthew 3, Jesus, after he was baptized, John heard the voice, heaven ripped open, and a voice saying, "This is my beloved son in whom I'm well pleased." And here, Jesus had the same experience. But not only did he say, "I love him, my son, my beloved," there was an instruction attached to it. And that instruction was, "Listen to him." This time, the disciples were overcome with fear, and they fell on their face. And you see, that makes sense because they understood what it meant for a voice for God to speak from a cloud. They understood. They were Jewish, Israelite. They were trained in the word. And so they understood that when God speaks from a cloud, you could die. That's why they said to Moses, please talk to God. Don't let him talk to us. You know, you let him talk to you. Because the experience was so terrifying. So William Blake, a famous English poet, said, when the doors of perceptions are cleansed, we will see everything as it is, infinite. You see, I believe that Jesus didn't just take the disciple on the mountain just to show off his glory and say, look, here I am, who I am. I believe that the disciples were struggling in their faith. You see, although they spent all this time with Jesus, they were struggling to understand who he was as a Messiah because they had preconceived notion of who Jesus was to be, of who the Messiah was supposed to be and what he was supposed to do. You see, the Messiah for them was supposed to come and liberate them. He was supposed to come and get rid of the Romans who were oppressing them and replace them into this position of power and authority. That's what the Messiah is supposed to do. Yet Jesus was having a conversation about dying, about going to Jerusalem and die. It just doesn't fit. Why would the Messiah go and die? I just want to challenge us today that sometimes, is it possible that we could miss what Jesus is doing in our life, what Jesus is doing in the world, because we have preconceived notions of who he is and who he's supposed to be and what he's supposed to be doing? Is it possible that our preconceived notion is blocking us from truly following Christ and be disciples who listen to him? You see, we can be in a community about Jesus and completely miss who Jesus is. We can even come to church and do the things of church and still miss who Jesus is because of our preconceived notion. Missing Jesus has nothing to do with Jesus, but with our own inability to see Jesus for who he truly is, especially when we're going through situations that doesn't make sense, that difficult situation that brings us suffering and pain, situation that doesn't feel good. You know, when we think about things that's going on around the world and we think about the earthquake that happened in Syria and Turkey, and we're trying to understand these things, you know, sometimes I've heard saying, did they deserve it? Is it something they did that this horrible situation can happen? You see, preconceived notion. When I came to St. Helens, I had preconceived notion about St. Helens and what my experience was going to be. A small amount was correct, but most of it was not true. You see, preconceived notion blocks us. They become hindrance of us truly experiencing what is happening, of truly engaging with each other, of truly seeing each other for who we are. And so as we're getting ready to enter into the season of Lent, I want to challenge you to make, I saw Rhonda put out a flyers of things that we could do in Lent. I want to challenge you to examine yourself and look at some of the preconceived notions that we all hold in our life that is preventing us from truly following Christ, from truly listening to him, from truly experiencing the fullness of God in our life. You see, the transfiguration, although it was such a glorious moment, amazing, his face shone and his clothes dazzled, and this is just a once in a maybe lifetime experience for those disciples. It wasn't so much about that. You see, the transfiguration points us down the mountain. It invites us to walk with Jesus into his suffering. He was heading to Jerusalem to face the cross. The transfiguration is inviting us to walk with Jesus in our suffering, to go down the mountain into those who are helpless, into the homeless, those who are homeless, into those who are sick, and to do the work of God. It's calling us to take up our cross, to deny ourselves, and to follow Jesus. It's calling us to listen to Jesus.